Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. I love to travel. Absolutely love it. So I do it as often as possible, which usually means one or two trips abroad each year. Besides the glory of different landscapes, architecture, people, food, customs, what I also find every time I go away is just how American I am. Impatient, pragmatic, fast-moving, harboring a constant expectation of efficiency. On an island outside Venice, I once got into a debate with the captain of a ferry because he was leaving the dock a full 15 minutes ahead of schedule, and that was the last boat of the night. This was back in the day when I could actually carry on a conversation in Italian. When I pointed this out to him and said he was probably leaving people in the lurch, he just gave a little smile and shrugged. That's the way they do things there. So, what does it mean to be a citizen of one place or another? Do you feel it? Does it feel different if you change? Producer Judith Kampfner tells us about it in today's Soundprint. She calls her story Citizenship Diary.
A year and a half ago, I became an American citizen. One bleak morning in an assembly hall in a community college in Brooklyn. More of that disappointing event later. The whole process of becoming naturalized wasn't emotional or exciting. It didn't make me feel part of a community. It hasn't taught me how to participate in American society. I don't talk right. I feel an outsider still, not part of the crowd. I feel a foreigner at a baseball game. And it doesn't matter how many times I go. I already had a green card, which made me a permanent resident alien. Yes, they still use that awful word. It took 6 years to get the green card, first having to change from one visa to another. My British husband was working in a university, and we finally got it under what was called a public interest waiver because he was working on the complete writings of Herman Melville.
Call me Ishmael. There's a magic in water that draws all men away from the land, leads them over the hills, down creeks and streams and rivers to the sea.
My name is Claudia Slobinski, and I'm an attorney with a law office in Lower Manhattan that specializes in immigration and nationality law issues.
When I decided to apply for citizenship, I chose Claudia's law office in busy Chinatown. It was just the kind of no-nonsense place which put me at my ease. I knew that much of the time we chatted, she wouldn't be billing me. I like the fact that she does a lot of asylum work, as well as representing creative types. She was kind and funny.
I think it's the most humorous sometimes when I take in someone who is extremely educated, a professor, a novelist, a filmmaker. We sit out in the waiting room and discuss in-depth political meanings of world citizenship, etc., you know. And you go in and find some bureaucrat who doesn't know the difference between the UK and the Ukraine.
Back in my apartment, I decided that for the first time in my life, I would compile an audio diary, documenting my mixed feelings about the citizenship process.
My citizenship diary. I feel a little bit self-conscious doing a diary, but I still think it's important because I think this is a very public kind of thing to do, becoming a citizen. This long journey will eventually result in me very weirdly standing in a huge room full of people, kind of rainbow room of people from all around the world who are actually putting their hands on their hearts and saying the pledge of allegiance to the American flag.
Now, if you're born an American, you probably have no idea about how a newly minted American gets processed. First, you have to fill out a long form. there were several questions relating to whether you'd been a member of the Nazi Party. I thought the form was a bit outdated. I mean, there was nothing about whether you had perhaps perpetrated atrocities in Kosovo or Darfur. That night, I switched on my diary.
I didn't want to check the box or tick the box that asks you whether you will fight for America. And I asked my lawyer if I could leave that blank, and she said that would be very stupid and no one would want a middle-aged woman to fight anyway. It's not that I'm thinking personally, it's on principle, of course. Many of my friends ask me why I want to become a citizen of the States when they are involved in Iraq.
Later, I sounded out my son, Max, who said, well, what about the Brits in Basra, then?
If you're a Brit, and you're really pointing the finger at America that much, their country is doing very similar things. It's a very hypocritical notion to then sort of see a great difference between the two for me.
And do you think the concept of dual allegiance is philosophically possible, but also practically possible?
In 1775, maybe it wasn't. In the 21st century, I think the US and the UK are about as close as to, sort of really thinking about the philosophical or spiritual differences is a bit indulgent.
Max is a British subject. Of course, he has our family green card, so he doesn't have to become a citizen, and it seems he's in no hurry.
While you're in university, there's a sort of a... you feel that every second that you're not spending time reading for school or doing something like that is a sort of a waste of money, a waste of time. And the massive amount of filings and paperwork that's needed, then right now doesn't seem to really make sense time-wise.
So you've got nothing against it in principle?
No, none at all. I mean, I've lived in the US since I was 7, so it would be, if I had something vastly wrong with the principle of being an official person there, I think maybe I should have moved beforehand.
But I wasn't becoming an American because I wanted to acquire an American identity. No, the cynical reason I was going to the trouble of becoming a citizen was that now that Max was in college and I was divorced, I wanted to go back to live and work in the UK. Of course, I wanted to return to America regularly since Max had no intention of living anywhere else. So I needed to make sure I could get in and out of the country without any immigration problems whatsoever. It seems I was aiming to acquire what Peter Spiro, professor of law at Temple University, calls a citizenship of convenience.
You're acting as a rational person and taking advantage of what's available to you and the possibility of this form of insurance. And it actually doesn't really take anything away from other American citizens, even those who live out their lives in the United States and swear genuine allegiance to the flag. At the same time, though, I think it does say something about what it means to be American if somebody is becoming American to leave America.
Was Professor Spiro being critical of me?
No, I wouldn't blame anybody for undertaking citizenship on that basis. And I don't think anything should or can be done about it. If a conservative pundit were to hear this story, it would provoke a rant. They might try to require of you that you promise to reside in the United States on an indefinite basis. Well, that's completely implausible in the age of globalization.
As more people spend their lives traveling and living in different countries, there are many citizens of convenience. Their sense of identity isn't determined by nationality. They define themselves by a sense of internationalism. My attorney, Claudia Slavinsky.
The nature of immigration has really changed as the ease of international airline travel has changed and become easier. Many more people are spending a lot of time in different countries for different reasons. And they need the ability to be able to be functioning members of society in a number of different countries.
I was standing in the check-in line at an airport in Berlin a few weeks ago, and a young man who looked South Indian said to his friend playfully, "Which passport should I use? The British American or the German. Many people have multiple passports and come from families who love to be nomadic, like Kwame Anthony Appiah, philosophy professor at Princeton.
I guess my feelings about multiple citizenship are partly the result of having grown up the way that I did, which is with an English mother and a Ghanaian father, living mostly in Ghana as a child, actually with a British passport for boring reasons, and never having regarded a passport as a very important thing except as a way to cross borders. And I now have a sister with a Norwegian husband and who's a resident of Namibia, and another sister who's got Nigerian citizenship, and so on. So I live in a family of many, many citizenships and many passports.
Today, I've plucked up the courage to open up the sample questions that one needs to study for the citizenship exam. There are over 90 questions, and there are answers given, but there are also paragraphs that explain some of the background. I didn't know what the stripes on the flag meant, and I've asked a couple of US friends, and no one's come up with the correct answer. One man, who I've always regarded as having a huge encyclopedic knowledge, said that they symbolized blood and bread. In fact, they symbolize the first 13 states of America. I am, for some reason, I don't know why, dreading studying these questions. I think it's something to do with my ambivalence about the citizenship. There is a kind of feeling of horror about the patriotism or patriotism of these questions.
I was shocked about how many questions there were about the flag.
In each case, there's the wording, our country, our flag. And I feel like it's not ours for me yet. I don't feel that I can say our flag. I still feel that it's your flag. And I'm resisting some of this ownership. I don't know if that's problematic or if that's just normal or I'm being extra sensitive. And I guess I should just stop thinking about the emotional side of all of this and just get on and learn these questions. I think also I have a sort of a resistance about the concept of citizenship. It means, in a funny kind of way, losing your individuality and adopting a uniform pose and becoming part of a body politic and a mass of people. And do I want that? Our country, our flag, ours.
Well, there's a reason why they put the our into it when you're not a member yet. The questions asked are sort of very stereotypical.
My son, Max.
They want to sort of not indoctrinate, but they want to sort of do the hard sell. You end up having to say things that most Americans never really think about. They never really think about, is this my flag? Is this something that speaks to me? You know, if I saw it being burned, would I, you know, have a really adverse reaction to it? It's not things that people think about very often.
Max did civics in 10th grade. He thinks I'm being pathetic. Why am I having these psychological blocks making it so hard to study for this citizenship test? Yes, I'm obsessing about betraying my citizenship of origin. And I also intellectually find it really hard because I want to know about concepts and the government only want you to parrot a factual answer. 6 months into the application, I moved back to London. I studied for the test with my dear friend Lynn in her suburban garden. It was a case of the blind leading the blind.
No, because they're 50 states.
So there are 100 senators.
Yeah.
So why would you have 435 representatives?
How am I going to remember that?
I think you're going to have to remember it as 345, but with the two, the four and the three reversed.
God, if I said the wrong answer first, do you think I'd have a chance to correct myself?
Like, yeah, because you're obviously nervous.
All right.
Yes, because you're obviously nervous. Okay. Who becomes president?
Lynn
president
has never heard of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. She's never met an INS apparatchik.
I don't really
they
know.
Won't be forgiving.
Was that the correct answer?
It says the Electoral College. I thought that the people of the United States elected the President of the United States.
It's really become something pretty farcical. It's actually been shown that that a majority of high school seniors here fail the test. There was a time in the first half of the 20th century in which there were much more searching and less standardized examinations of naturalization applicants by federal judges. So you would come before a federal judge to swear the oath of allegiance, but before the judge administered that oath, he'd really test you in a sort of meaningful one-on-one way as to whether you understood English and whether you understood the way the Constitution works. It's now really just a test of rote memorization and not even much.
If Professor Spiro believes young Americans can't pass the test, what hope do we fledgling citizens have? Claudia, my attorney, agrees with Professor Spiro that the test is hard, even impossible for some.
Well, I would say, that my clients may not be a representative sample, but that the test itself is a substantial barrier to obtaining citizenship, especially amongst older immigrants, because of the language requirement that it be in English for the most part, and because of the substance of the examination.
I had to fly back to New York from London twice to have my fingerprints done. I was so nervous that my sweaty hands didn't print well, and they kept futilely spraying me with Windex. When the day for the test came, I was even more nervous, and I had to have Claudia with me. No one else had brought their attorney to hold their hand. They were all looking nonchalant while I had a briefcase full of papers. I'd written up flashcards and was testing myself in line. And then my turn came. Ah, I was asked a question not on the list. Why was the Civil War fought? The examiner was African American. Was there an agenda here? I answered very slowly to make sure I was phrasing it sensitively. The Civil War was fought over slavery. She nodded and went on to the next question. Claudia was poker-faced, but afterwards she said,
it was almost a trick question. And certainly if there had been some controversy that you were considered to have answered wrongly, I would have objected to it. They're to stick to, I'm not even sure that question was on the list. You know, that then would have been more formalized into some kind of an appeal objection. Had you had any negative consequences from that?
Sadly, within weeks of passing the test, I'd forgotten which of the names of the 13 original states. Wouldn't it be better to test us on something which would be useful to everyday life in America? Other countries are just developing citizenship tests, which don't just stick to history and politics. Australia unveiled one in 2007. And there are lots of questions about cricket. But maybe that's not exactly a good idea either, says Professor Appiah.
It seems to suggest a funny picture of what really matters. It seems to me what really matters is joining the political community, and that doesn't really mean you have to, appreciate opera if you're Italian or cricket if you're Australian. People think that if you come to care about cricket or baseball in America or soccer in a lot of countries, you'll somehow attach yourself more tightly to the nation, and that just strikes me as just based on a mistake.
And if you decide to become a citizen of Italy, should you be able to identify this opera? Or know the names of different shapes of pasta? Princeton's Kwame Anthony Appiah became an American citizen recently. Asking people who are naturalizing about sporting heroes may not be fair, says Professor Appiah.
Tremendous courage.
Since you can be a perfectly good Australian citizen and hate cricket just by being born in Australia and having that kind of taste, it seems odd to require of someone who isn't born in Australia that they should know about a sport that some people born in Australia have felt entitled to ignore.
And Professor Peter Spiro says you could ask some pop culture questions, but that also has problems.
If I walked by Britney Spears on the street, I wouldn't know who she was, except maybe that she'd have some huge entourage. The popular culture itself is no longer distinctively American. Of course, Britney Spears is known to much of the rest of the world. And once everybody becomes an American, no one's an American because there's nothing distinctive in the identity.
American identity is weak and becoming weaker, says Peter Spiro, and this could pose a problem now that more people are becoming dual citizens. Significantly, three countries in 1998 allowed their citizens to also become Americans: Mexico, Colombia, and the Dominican Republic. But a friend of mine who's Colombian is absolutely clear that he ranks his birthright citizenship much higher than his American and will always do so. Professor Spiro says this is very natural.
Dual citizens are typically going to rank their American citizenship somewhere below the first rank. And I think that has important implications for American national identity. I don't think there's anything that can be done to reverse the incidence of dual citizenship or try to force people to rank their American loyalties first in some way. So I think this is a phenomenon that in many ways does dilute particularly an American identity. So I think that there's this probability that you're going to elevate one citizenship tie above the other.
I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potentate, state, or sovereignty.
At the naturalization ceremony, you have to swear an oath denouncing your country of origin. It's a bit of a game because you usually get to keep your original passport. Here's a Mexican friend remembering what he had to say.
Of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And when it came to my American swearing-in ceremony, I didn't like denouncing my country, even though I knew these were mere words. I think for Brits, tradition and pageantry run through our bloodstream, and we do take formal words seriously. I knew my country would let me have dual citizenship. This is now a cool, modern, and not unusual thing to do. But I felt as if my neck was about to get stuck on a spoke and displayed at Traitor's Gate at the Tower of London.
And that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. So help me, God.
If maybe the sense of occasion at the ceremony had been more engrossing, I wouldn't have felt so gloomy and torn. The misconception in America is that everyone has a ceremony with a judge and it's very emotional and formal, and that's what's fed to the public every July the 4th. Instead, I had to wait for an hour and a half in a cold hall in downtown Brooklyn, and then a few bureaucrats came on stage and introduced each other and turned on a video. Then, different officials came down to our seats, called us to stand, and passed around our papers. We never even got up to the stage. I only brought one friend, Letitia Mulzak, whom I recorded for my audio diary afterwards, when she tried to cheer me up.
Anything that is related to a function of the city, the state, or the federal government, it's more of a clerical thing. And with 500 people, I don't know if we would have been there all day if everybody had to go up and receive their individual certificates. The little bit of the letdown was not so much of that, so much that we couldn't find a place for brunch afterwards. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't do brunch on a Monday? Mm-hmm. Or at least a Starbucks, for God's sakes. You know? But it was more clerical than ceremonial, I grant you that. But, you know.
And what about the message from President Bush getting stuck in the same place four times?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's poetic justice for you, I think. You know, everybody was considering that a bit humorous and stuff. It brought a bit of levity.
My attorney, Claudia, was sympathetic.
You were disappointed, implying that you expected something more meaningful, keeping with a momentous occasion of acquiring a new citizenship. And some of them were set up in stadiums, you know, with huge numbers attending and music and the whole thing. And then sometimes there's just quickly done administratively, as in your experience. But the numbers pressure is really very intense.
And defending the American way, my son Max said, the bureaucrats can't satisfy everybody.
Everyone in that room's reasons for becoming an American are probably as different as they could possibly be. Whether it's reuniting with family or economic possibilities or religious freedom or, I mean, any number of things. So even if you got the most sort of imaginative, warm-hearted person running it, what do you do? Like, what vision of America do you show for a room full of people that are coming at it for such different reasons?
For me, the best thing about that ceremony was that you could go to a table afterwards and register to vote. That was the prize. With a green card, you have most of the benefits of citizenship except the right to participate in elections. That is what I'm excited about. I will travel back to New York to vote. It is my right now, and also I consider it a privilege and an adventure. I wish, though, that in order to participate better in political life, new citizens could go to workshops. Somehow, the federal government should organize classes of instruction, courses on how to vote, how to be a member of a PTA, how to be on a jury. That would be welcoming. It would be helpful. It would diminish feelings of being a bit intimidated about many aspects of American life. Maybe even a class on the words of take me out to a ball game. Take me. Yep. I wish I knew the rest.
Citizenship Diary was produced by Judith Kampfner. The show was mixed by Jared Weisbro. Judith has produced quite a few pieces for Soundprint. You can find them on our website, soundprint.org. On the next Soundprint, stories from women falsely accused of child abuse based only on the opinion of one doctor. First, Do No Harm, next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee. Just call 1-888-38-TAPES. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. We'd like to know what you think. Your comments help us. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. And be sure to mention your local station. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.